Hi, everybody. This is Heidi with the DSG Connect podcast. And today I'm excited to welcome a few people on that have exciting things to share about custom abutments. First, I want to welcome on Dr. Mongreen. He is the Director of Clinical Advocacy, Clinical Digital Technology, Scanners and Labs for Heartland. Just to give you a little bit of background about him, he practices dentistry part-time, which provides clinical focus as he supports his fellow clinicians. He also partners with a variety of vendors to elevate and improve services that they provide with a targeted focus to grow digital dentistry over all facets and platforms by providing digital solutions. And we also have Damon Lease, who's the VP of Digital Technology at DSG, and Eric Wade, who's the Implant Department Manager at DSG Clearwater. Welcome, gentlemen. Thank you for joining us today on the podcast.
Great. Thank you, Heidi, for having us. And my name is Damon Lease. I'm the Vice President of Digital Technology. And I'll be asking both Dr. Mongreen and Eric Wade a couple questions in regards to implant cases. And from the clinical point of view from Dr. Mongreen, and then from the lab perspective from Eric Wade, who is the implant manager at Clearwater. And so let's get started. I have a couple questions. And first for Dr. Mongreen, when you have a case that comes in and you're evaluating that implant case and looking at it from the standpoint of taking an impression, if you're going to do a conventional impression, how do you evaluate that versus doing the case with the digital impression?
Well, Damon, thanks for asking that question. You know, I lead our scanner initiative at Heartland Dental. We have 1,300 scanners in operation currently. So there's a lot of interest in that among our doctors. What I found personally is that the single tooth implant in many cases is a great place for the digital scan. I think that there's three different ways that that may happen. With the stock abutment, you're going to scan it just like you would a crown. I do most of my cases with a custom abutment. And then you're going to use a scan body, or you guys in the lab call it a flag, scan flag. And it's really important to recognize that when you're using a scan body, the process is determined by the scan body that you choose. So if you choose an argon scan body, you are going to use argon workflow. If you want to use a original manufacturer, if you do a Zimmer or something like that, that's all the lab can do. I think that's really important for doctors to understand, because in the past, we never had to think about that. We just put the abutment in there, the impression abutment, put it in the model, and away you went. What I like about the digital scan for the single tooth implant is that I have found that it improves the accuracy for the single tooth. The cases go in much more easily. The critical element, of course, is to make sure that that scan body is fully seated. Now, in anteriors, we can partially capture the tissue with a pre-scan where you take the healing abutment out and then scan that before you put the scan body or scan flag on. However, there's certainly going to be some tissue collapse. So if you're doing an anterior case where you have done a tissue forming process with a customized temporary abutment that you have modified over time, you have to divert to analog. One of my sayings is that if all you have is a hammer, everything has to be a nail. So it's really important to know when we need to use the hammer and when we need to use something else. Really big, multiple cases, you know, I think I'll let Eric weigh in on that a little bit. But I have found that some of the cases with multiple abutments, whether it's implant restoration or even fixed, can be quite challenging with the scanner. And so there are times when it's really good to take an impression. Eric, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree as well. And also, when it comes to making a verification jig, the digital models, it's somewhat difficult to remove those if we do have to reposition one of them. And the impression copings, when we use those to make the jigs, it makes it a lot easier for us to modify the model in the lab. especially like you say, multi-unit abutments where we're splinting restorations or full arch hybrid cases, definitely want to do conventional impressions with those.
I have looked into research on a lot of those, and although some of the scanners claim that they have a very high accuracy and reproducibility, I wonder sometimes, and I think there are so many variables, and particularly if you're using a scan body that isn't radio opaque, you really, if you're doing a bigger case and you choose to scan, you should use, absolutely, and I try to use in all my cases, a scan body that has a metal base. So I think that's very important. I think the key thing I want to really emphasize here in the few minutes that we have is you need to communicate with your lab. Every lab has their preferred workflows. They all work, but you know how you have that one case where it's like maybe you worked with a specialist and it's an implant you've never seen. It's really difficult. Don't do that to your lab. Talk to your lab. Make sure you're using the workflow that's part of their everyday process. I think that's so critically important. Also, our lab partners, we're not always really nice to our lab people, and I hate that. At Heartland, I'm changing that culture. Our doctors have to be nice to the labs. We make sure of that. But the labs are often reluctant to tell you something that maybe you ought to know, because there are many doctors put on the doctor hat and say, no, I know everything, and the lab knows nothing. So I have talked to some of our partner labs where the doctor will send in a digital scan, but using the wrong scan body. So they'll print that model and then re-scan it utilizing a scan body that they can work with that works with what the doctor asked for. And what a waste of time and energy, and what an opportunity to create error. So make sure you really work with your lab and make sure that they know they can talk to you.
Great. Thank you very much for those answers to those questions, and really appreciate also Dr. Mongrain communication. Like you said, that's really the essential part of this, with the lab and doctors communicating together, because not all cases are straightforward, and I think every case is different, so you have to manage it appropriately. One of the other questions that I have, and for you, Dr. Mongrain, is in regards to cement retained restorations versus screw retained restorations, how do you evaluate that with your patients, and what do you choose for your options in regards to those two?
It's so interesting. Over the last 15 to 18 years that I've been placing and restoring implants, how that has changed. But of course, what happens is that you learn, but when you do things, you learn. And the key situation here that we're trying to avoid is cement subgingivally around the abutment and around the implant that causes tissue breakdown and long-term infection. So the standard of care, I think, today is whenever possible, use screw retained. Obviously, in the posteriors, that's a lot easier to do. In the anteriors, you may not be able to do that. And sometimes there'll be angled abutments. I think that the key here is to utilize screw retained whenever possible, especially in the posterior. And in the anterior, almost most of my cases are going to be a custom abutment with a cemented restoration, utilizing it very carefully to make sure I don't leave cement behind.
Great, that's fantastic. And Eric, on your side, in the evaluation of that, when it comes into the laboratory, you have to evaluate if a case can be screw retained, or if it might be better cement retained. What are you looking for in the laboratory?
Yeah, for cementable restorations, we're mainly looking if we can have enough vertical height to have enough retention for a cement retained restoration. But sometimes if we see that it would benefit us to drop the margins further subgingival and see if the doctor wants to change to a screw mentable where we would cement it, that can be an option. And then if it's a screw retain crown, we're evaluating many times the path of insertion into the implant based on the adjacent teeth contact, because we don't want, if it's tilted too far to the mesial, we don't want to leave a food trap down at the gingival embrasure. So we'll kind of bring that up, that we may need to do a cementable restoration. And if an angulated screw channel is necessary, we can present that to the doctor. But on those cases, it's really important that you have the right driver, because most of the implant systems, they have their own specialized angulated screw channel driver that's needed. And, you know, it's always good to check with the doctor, because if they, like you say, if they're working with a specialist and they don't have that, definitely don't want to go chair time and not have the proper equipment. So that's a couple different things that we look at and weigh our options case by case basis.
Oh, that's fantastic. Thank you for that information. And one of the other questions I had, and this is really around looking at the case clinically and looking at if you use a stock abutment or if you use a custom abutment. And from your perspective, Dr. Mongrain, how do you evaluate that clinically with that patient?
You know, Damon, I've gotten rather spoiled over the years, and I do most all of my cases now with custom abutments. Mm-hmm. I start out using primarily stock abutments. And of course, there's a significant cost savings for the doctor and the patient using a stock abutment. I think that my key decision-making process there is that what type of case is it, and is it a pretty straightforward case? In other words, you know, if it's a more idealistic, adequate vertical, good placement of the implant itself, we have low requirements such as a posterior tooth. That, you know, if all the factors are there, there's absolutely nothing wrong with using a stock abutment. I think where you get a challenge is if you have to significantly modify the abutment, or, you know, what Eric was talking about, significant angulations. Of course, there's a variety of stock abutments that are available. At some point in time, though, time and motion, it just becomes better to go ahead and go custom. So I think that I would just look at the 80-20 rule and say, is this case really straightforward and very basic and idealistic? Then let's use a stock abutment. I think it's so, you know, kind of a comment that about the partnership with the lab tech. When you asked me about screw retained abutments, I went totally clinical, which is nothing wrong with that. But then Eric astutely brought up all of the technical aspects about the path of insertion, leaving food traps, things I, you know, forget to think about because I'm not looking at the model. So that's just reiterating, that's where the partnership with the lab is so important, because Eric is looking at things differently than I am.
Yeah, great points, Dr. Mongrain, and also great evaluation as far as the stock and custom. And I know, you know, that's something that we see quite a bit of, as well as more custom. But maybe Eric, you can maybe give us a little bit of your perspective from the laboratory on what you're seeing today in cases that come in and custom versus stock, and maybe the benefits of both, and maybe some of the things that you may want to shy away from on either one of them as well. What's your opinion on that and your point of view?
Yeah, like Dr. Mongrain was saying, some of the more straightforward cases for single unit restorations, I see stock abutments work with minimal preparation to those. And a lot of those, with the increase of screw-mentable or screw-retained crowns, we're getting our emergence profile from the design of the crown versus where we started off doing custom abutments, where you could have the emergence profile designed as part of that custom abutment. But more and more cases, as they're converting to screw-retained, it's actually gives more opportunity to use stock abutments. Some of the benefits, obviously, for multiple units, for a bridge, custom abutments is far better, you know, especially cementable restorations, keeping the abutment prep parallel for draw. And where if you have stock abutments, a lot of times you have to remove so much of the abutment to make it parallel that you lose a lot of your retention on your cementable restorations. So those are the some of the things that we run into. But we usually try to identify it once we have the model or the digital scan, and can whether if the doctor writes on the digital that they're sending in stock abutments, we can evaluate it and determine what the best route is, if it's going to be custom or stock. Because we try to save clients money as well, too. If there's an option to use a tie base and do a screw retain, sometimes that is a good option as well. So a lot of versatility in the products that are out. And so that's some of the decisions, you know, and every case is different. But those are some of the things that we look out for.
Yeah, great points, Eric. And really appreciate the insight there. And we definitely, it's nice to see both sides of this. And again, I think it comes down to always it's going to be communication. One of the other questions I had, and this is really the last question that I have for you both. And Dr. Mongrain, on your side of things, when you have a case and you want to make a custom healing abutment, or maybe you want to use a different tissue former from another healing abutment system, an implant system that you're working with, when do you like to use custom healing abutments, and what kind of cases are you looking at for those in your practice?
Well, I think in most cases what I'm looking at is in the aesthetic zone, where we have to contour the tissue, help it to grow and become, get to a stable point, you know, tissue, guided tissue growth, stabilization, so that we have a good emergence profile, we have good tissue contours. Those are the cases where we're going to put the extra effort into the custom healing abutment, or even a customized temporary that we sculpt and modify over time. Those cases, you know, if you do them right at the beginning, it saves a lot of trouble later on.
Great points. Yeah, I the aesthetic zone is definitely the area that we see that I see them the most. And Eric, on your side with custom healing abutments, maybe what are some of the techniques that you're using in the laboratory to make those, or what have you seen out there that is the best fit for custom healing abutments and on the laboratory side?
Yeah, custom healing abutments, if we do make them at the laboratory, usually we get a preliminary impression and we'll have a temp cylinder and, you know, adjust the soft tissue model to get, you know, ideal emergence, and then something that can be, you know, adjusted or added to as necessary that you see chair side. And as far, we do see it more in the anterior zone, but we also see it in, say, a molar where, you don't want a TP or a T looking abutment, you know, like saying if you don't do the proper contouring of the tissue, sometimes you have this very cylindrical emergence until you get to tissue height, and then you have to reach out, you know, not a very natural emergence out to the contact, and you're spreading across the tissue. So we do see more in molars where we see that as a benefit. You know, bicuspids, it's not a huge of an issue because less distance to cover there. But those are some of the things that, you know, at least the lab benefits from it. And on the digital side, when we see custom healing abutments used, the important thing is actually once you remove it, to get that tissue scan, and that goes for even normal healing abutments as well. A lot of times we'll get the scan of the scan body, but we're not actually getting the tissue scan. And usually right after you remove the custom or stock healing abutment, you go ahead and scan that tissue before it collapses. And then we can save that as a separate file and then design our emergence profile of the custom abutment or crown to match that. So there is definitely a benefit, you know, both in the molar and anterior regions for those.
Great. Well, excellent information, Eric, and very detailed. Appreciate you giving that perspective from the laboratory. And before I wrap up, I just want to thank both of you, especially you, Dr. Mongreen, for joining us today and really giving your insight on the clinical and also, again, for talking about the relationship you have and what you expect from your doctors with the laboratories. And so we really appreciate you being here. And then also, Eric Wade, thank you very much for your technical insight here from the laboratory perspective. And very thankful today that you guys both could join in. And very informative questions. And so appreciate your guys' time and just want to thank you for everything.
You're welcome.
My pleasure.
All right. Excellent. Okay.